Anything you can be, I can be greater. Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. As the song says, anything you can do, I can do better.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Well, at least when it comes to the jobs that you and I have.
But when it comes to sports performance, things are not equal. Men are generally stronger and faster than women thanks to their physiology. But there have been claims made over the years that the longer an event goes, think ultramarathon or even longer, the more advantages women have over men.
And there are documented cases where women do beat men in ultra-endurance events. But are those exceptions rather than the rule? Marquette University's Sandra Hunter has been studying sex differences in sports performance for more than two decades, long enough to compile a great deal of data. She joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to set the record straight.
Sandra Hunter, welcome back to Lake Effect. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be here.
So, the myth, men versus women, who is better, who is physically more capable, and in particular when it comes to endurance sports. So, to start on the most basic level for our listeners, with men versus women, what are the basic key physical differences that each possess that either put one at an advantage or the other?
In most sports that require power or some type of endurance, the best men will always outperform the best women. Certainly there's overlap that a lot of women can perform better than a lot of men. But overall, the best men will outperform the best women. And the reason for that is that in terms of endurance, the maximal oxygen consumption and that capacity of men is much better than women, and usually about 10%. And the reason is basically because men have larger hearts, they have more muscle mass, they have more hemoglobin, which is that oxygen-carrying capacity of the blood, and they have less body fat to carry during certainly weight-bearing activities such as running. And so it's not surprising that you see around about a 10-12% difference in world records between men and women across the board, certainly in endurance events. Sometimes in events that require more power, sometimes those percentages can increase. But that's just the bottom line. And it's always going to make it difficult for women to outdo men.
Now, some growing number of recent standout performances by women in ultra-distant events has, I suppose, researchers, athletes, coach, believing that women maybe still aren't far from achieving the full potential as athletes. So you mentioned one thing is that women have more fat on their bodies, and mm-hmm. some people have said that this helps them in the extreme endurance runs to help fuel them or keep them going. And do women also have different muscle structure that allows their muscles to perform at a long, sustained rate compared to men going out hot and maybe losing steam?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So there is this theory that women will outdo men, particularly at the very long events. And there is some credibility behind that. But we looked into that with some of the research we did. We looked at the sex differences in ultramarathon distances and many of the events across America. And we didn't find that to be true on average. You know, the reality is you get less women and less men competing in those events. So you get more of these anomalies that occur. And there's other factors that will contribute to performance during those really long races, particularly if it's hot or cold, that may have little to do with the physiology of that particular person, but, you know, some spurious event. But on that topic, I did say that men will outperform women. I've done a lot of research now over the last 20 years in showing that, in fact, women are less fatigable than men if you get them to perform a very particular exercise at the same intensity as a man's. For instance, we get subjects, both men and women, into the lab, and we've noted that the women will be able to outdo men if we ask them to perform a contraction at 20% of their maximum or 30% of their maximum for as long as possible. And so we find that for these very isolated cases of arm muscles, lower limb muscles, that certainly women will outperform women. And that really is reflective of the different makeup, which what you were alluding to before, of their muscles and the types of fibers that they have, and that a lot of the makeup of the fibers of women in particular are more fatigue resistant. women on average have more fatigue-resistant muscle fibers than men. And so this allows them to, under certain conditions, at the same relative intensity, say 20% or 30%, to certainly be less fatigable than men. And sometimes it can be quite stark. And I've studied that for many years now, and we've looked at models as to why that occurs, but it's predominantly due to differences within the muscle.
Now, you yourself have been in the field studying these things, but there overall is a lack of female athletes being studied compared to men, as well as how long they've been studied for. I mean, for example, we couldn't officially run marathons until the 1970s. So how does this lack of data affect things now and going forward?
Yeah, that's a really good observation. So, and I think you're alluding to, say, for the marathon where women were only legally able to compete in the 1970s, which is, I just find that interesting and shocking at the same time.
Yeah.
But so there certainly hasn't been the same opportunity. And what we see in biomedical research in general as well is that there's a huge sex bias for less inclusion of women in biomedical research studies. And so as a result, it certainly puts us at risk of not understanding what the true sex differences are due to, say, physiology or anatomy, at least within the body. And that sort of goes over to diseases as well and truly understanding what diseases are.
Right. And on top of that, Title IX was implemented in the 70s, but many schools didn't feel the full effects until maybe 10, 20 years after. Some can argue
Correct.
Still today that things aren't being implemented equally. So has Title IX affected how men and women are studied in exercise as well, or in endurance sports?
I think it's been more of an awareness. There's a couple of reasons probably as to why women aren't studied as much, particularly in the exercise science that I've noted. A lot of the researchers were male to begin with, and over time that has changed, and that's certainly not always the case now. But also, there's a lot of male researchers who've come up to me, you know, in conferences and just said, I'm not comfortable with dealing with the menstrual cycle of women and it complicates things. So we just study men and we just study males. And
but does it really complicate things?
I don't think it does, not at all. And in fact, the research that we've done in my research lab has shown that, in fact, the differences across the menstrual cycle for a woman is that those differences are much less than the differences, say, between men and women, and that they're just small fluctuations and that they really have very limited effect on some of these more pertinent issues of, you know, strength and fatigability differences between men and women. And so I think it's more perception and that you know, we've just got to start including women more than men in a lot of these studies. With this sex differences research, it's been really interesting. There's really two approaches. One is to bring men and women into the research laboratory and to understand their physiology. There's no doubt women are less fatigable, but men are stronger and faster and more powerful. The other approach is to take real-world data, performance data, and then to try and understand the physiology based on that real-world data. And that's what economists do. That's what social scientists do. They take real-world data and try and understand it. And so about 10 years ago, a journalist from Runner's World called me up and asked me if there was, and this is how I really got into this, is there any sex difference in the age at which men and women peak in their marathon performance? And I said to her, I have no idea. And the reason she was asking, because in the Beijing Olympics, the woman who won was 38 years of age, and the guy who won, the male, was 21. And there's this sort of perception out there that women may be older when they perform best at marathons. I said, I have no idea. So I got some undergrads and said, we can look at this. Let's go back and do some data mining now that there's a lot of results online and we can find a lot of information about the best runners. And I said, you've got to find their ages. In the top five runners who won these major marathons like the Boston, the New York, the Chicago, Berlin, the Olympics, the World Championships. And we also looked at the performances and we compared the best men to the best women. But on the ages and that age question, are men and women different in the ages at which they peak in their performance? The answer was no, they're not. In fact, they're about 29 years of age on average. There was a bit of a trend for women in the London Marathon and the Chicago Marathon to be a few years older as they won. But we put that down to the fact that those marathons are flatter. And if you're an older woman, you probably want to run a flatter marathon just because your power starts to go. I mean, it's the same with men, but that was what we hypothesized. But overall, there's very little age difference. But the most thrilling thing that came out of that first article and that first research study was that we compared the first male and the first female, the second male and the second female, and looked at the sex difference. And when you take the first, it was around about 11.5% difference, sex difference, which made sense. And these are the best runners in the world, and this was across about 30 years of data. But when you got out to the fifth person, the sex difference had increased to about 13%. I thought, well, why is that so? Why is the fifth best male and the fifth best female, why is the sex difference bigger here? So then we did another study and we looked at the New York Marathon data because we hypothesized that, in fact, it may be that there's less depth in the pool of runners within women because they haven't been competing as long, only since the 70s. And the interesting thing about the New York Marathon is that we're able to get age groups and we're able to get the numbers of men and women within age groups. And so we're able to look at these correlations between the ratio and the numbers of men and women within each age group and the sex difference. And we found a fantastic and really nice relationship between the number of men and women within an age group and the sex difference. And basically, the less women within an age group, the bigger the sex difference. And it explained about a third of the data. The other two-thirds of the data is explained by pure physiological differences. So I was sort of a bit gobsmacked. I thought, wow, can it be this simple? The talent pool is less because women just aren't competing at the same rate. The interesting thing in that data was that the 20 to the 29-year-olds, they did have a ratio of 1 to 1. And when we looked at that, their sex difference was about 11%. And so it showed me that, yeah, this is a real issue. Mm-hmm. If women aren't competing at the same rates and the participation is less, we really won't and don't understand the true physiological sex differences and what's relevant for women. And we assume in a lot of our research when we test just men that what's relevant for men is relevant for women. But that's not always the case. Particularly if exercise fatigability is different, if there's responses to training that may be different between men and women. So it's just fascinating. It's probably a window into a much bigger issue where if women are included less in research studies in general in biomedical science, that in fact we're not going to truly understand what the sex differences are and may miss some things, particularly with our research into drugs.
So there is the gap in participation, but do you think it's because, you know, are women less or more active than men today? And in addition to that, is it because of the old myth that women aren't competitive, that our nature of competitiveness is not strongly fueled as is compared to men, or their sense of, you know, competing with each other rather?
Yeah, there is that theory out there, and it's being fueled by a lot of research. But we looked into that because I did have a colleague who approached me and said, I think women are less competitive than men, and that some of this sex difference is actually explained by the fact that women are less competitive and they're not trying as hard. And I was shocked. In fact, when we...
Could you say this with a straight face?
So we do studies in my lab where we actually measure the ability of the brain to activate the muscle. And there's zip differences between men and women. That in fact, that women are equally motivated to perform maximal contractions just as much as men are. So there's that bit of evidence. But certainly with running events, there is the possibility that women are less competitive or less risk takers. That's what we rephrased it as. Are they less of a risk taker? Now, we collected some data over 14 marathons was about 91,000 data points. And we compared the pacing of men and women across these marathons. So we compared how fast men went out versus how fast women went out in the first half of the run versus the second half. And those who believe that women are less competitive than men would hypothesize that men are going to go out faster because they believe they can, they're more competitive, they're going to run faster, and then they're just going to slow more because in a marathon, sometimes that happens. You sort of hit a wall and it can be almost catastrophic in terms of performance. And that women will be more evenly paced. So, and that's exactly what we did find. We didn't find it in the elite women and men. We found that there was very little difference in pacing. But the alternative hypothesis is that women also have, they have a more robust ability to glycogen spare. And so it could be still a physiological difference. So to combat that, I said to him, well, let's study a distance where glycogen is not an issue, and that would be, say, the 10K race. So then we did another study where we looked at about 200,000 data points, and we found certainly that there was still a small sex difference in pacing, but it was mostly eradicated, and that, in fact, that the men and women did fairly similarly across the 10K race. So that proved to me that for at least this domain, certainly women and men have similar motivations. Now, why they do a marathon may be different, but their drive to win, their drive to compete, I think is not particularly different.
The sex difference, you know, would this term even be needed, or can we truly solve and point specifically to a sex difference until men and women are fully incorporated equally? You know, will this always be a thing to hypothesize and theorize about?
Yeah, I mean,
for the long-term future.
I suppose if there's a one-to-one ratio in competitive sports and in many things, then we'll really see what the differences are. And those differences should be celebrated. It's not like women are less than men or men are less than women. And I talk about this not because I think women are more important, but because they're just as important. And I think that's really a key thing to remember.
Dr. Sandra Hunter is a professor at Marquette University's Exercise Science Program. She spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find more about Dr. Hunter's research at wuwm.com.